You're listening to an extended interview from the Jazz FM Business Breakfast. A version of this was first broadcast on Wednesday, the 7th of June, 2017. I'm Nick Howard. Tomorrow, we're casting our votes in possibly the most significant and perplexing election in a generation. Regardless of whether you've already made up your mind or are still on the fence, no one can deny there aren't proper choices to be made when the polls open at 7 o'clock. Earlier, I spoke to Shadow Business and Enterprise Minister Bill Esterson and asked what firms can expect if there's a Labour victory.
The businesses I talked to, Nick, want investment in infrastructure. They want better roads, rail, broadband, energy security and better prices for that matter. And they know the government has to make that investment, and that's what Labour is offering to business. They also need decent public services because people who own businesses, people who work in businesses need the health service, their children need schools, and they need decent council services as well. So Labour is offering a comprehensive plan for the future of our country, which will see businesses able to invest with certainty, with confidence in this country and be in a position to create the high-paid jobs that in the end will be good for business, because if people are being paid well, they've got more to spend with business, which helps business and obviously helps the wider economy.
Now, you haven't been as visible a figure within this election campaign than perhaps some of the rest of the Labour top table. Can we take that as a sign of what Jeremy Corbyn thinks about business?
My colleague Rebecca Long-Bailey is the member of the Shadow Cabinet for Business, and she speaks about business, and John McDonnell as the Shadow Chancellor speaks about business. I'm some way down the pecking order, so I don't think it's anything unusual for junior front benchers to get less coverage. To be honest, if the media don't invite me, I can't go on the media. So thank you for inviting me along today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to speak to you. Let's look through what business could make of some of the tax deals relating to the Labour manifesto. So the manifesto does list some large tax hikes for business and borrowing commitments as well for the wider economy. But that in turn is there to pay for plenty of spending. Now, the IFS, the Institute for Fiscal Studies, has been sceptical about whether a Labour government would be able to raise as much from rising corporation tax rates and rising income tax bands, as perhaps the manifesto says. If that was to happen, hypothetically, would it be spending that was cut or the taxes that would go up further?
Well, I hope hope when you interview the Conservatives, you'll point out that their manifesto has no costings in it, and there is no idea how they would pay for any of their plans or what would be cut to pay for some of the proposals that they have made. Labour's programme is fully costed, and every item of spending is matched with a figure in the manifesto. I made the point before, Nick, that business wants investment in roads, rail, broadband, energy, and in particular in skills. If I talk to smaller firms, it is the shortage of skills that is real worry in this country. And that does mean investing, but it means investing long-term. In the same way as a business will borrow money against a business plan or against a piece of plant or machinery or a building, or a homeowner will borrow money to buy a house. That's what economies do, and we need to borrow long term, do that against the increased tax receipts that will be generated by growth. So there's nothing unusual in borrowing money. In fact, the Tory Chancellor, Conservative Chancellor Philip Hammond, in the autumn statement just a few months ago, said that with interest rates at record low levels, this was the time to borrow money. So I think if the Conservatives are able to say it, I think Labour probably should be able to do it as well. And he'd said £23 billion in the autumn statement. We're saying £25 billion a year. So not a lot of difference. The difference is how we're going to invest it. And we're going to invest it to help businesses to grow and to create the high-paid jobs that are crucial to the success of this country.
Bill, my question wasn't about whether spending is a good thing, but whether, given we've
you asked me both, actually, didn't you? You also asked me about corporation tax, to be fair. So thank you for reminding me. We're proposing that for larger businesses, those earning profits, annual profits of over 300,000 a year, that there is an increase in corporation tax back to where it was in 2010, which would still be the lowest in the G7 largest economies in the world, and that increase would only be for those larger companies, because and that would raise something like 19 billion a year to fund improvements in public services, in particular some of the investment in skills that I touched on before, and crucially in the future of the education service, lifelong education, national education service, we've talked about the health service, and the other proposals in our manifesto. Now, I mentioned the larger businesses. Smaller companies will be exempt from that, because we're going to reintroduce the smaller company rate of corporation tax, which was abolished by the coalition government, so the rate for smaller firms will stay at 19% as it is now. So we think it's really, really important to do that, that we're providing greater support as a result for the smaller firms in this country. Again, that's about getting the economy right, because we don't have enough businesses that have the support to start up and grow in this country. We don't have enough that grow to be larger companies, and that is a key change that's needed for the success of our economy and the success of our country.
But again, if the forecasts don't hold out, because obviously we're heading into Brexit, which we'll talk about just in a moment, but difficult to know what the economy will look like after years of negotiation and coming out of the EU. If the forecasts didn't hold up, would it be spending that went down or taxes that go up?
Well, we've costed the manifesto, which the Conservatives have refused to do. And no one knows for certain what the economy will actually do in a year's time, 2 years' time, 5 years' time. Of course, that's true. So all we can do is make an estimate, and we will have to adjust our plans accordingly. But this is the prediction, these are the plans, and there is actually some wiggle room in the figures, because we've been cautious in our estimates and have built in additional resources in those figures.
So let's look at another headline part of the manifesto, which was to do with taking businesses or taking parts of the economy into public ownership. So railways, Royal Mail, some utility firms as well, taken into public ownership, or public corporations set up within the industry.
Yep.
Would that be the end of Labour's ambitions, or would you be eyeing up other industries potentially for nationalisation?
Well, the manifesto is clear, isn't it, that we want to bring back the railways as the franchises run out. We can bring them back, and that doesn't cost anything. We've already seen that done successfully with East Coast Trains, which actually returned money to the taxpayer, hundreds of millions of pounds. It's a much lower cost way of running the railways, and it provided the highest levels of customer satisfaction, so it clearly worked. And the return of Royal Mail and water clearly are of a similar nature, where customers having to pay far too much, and it's just not worth being privatised. But what's in the manifesto is what we will do in government, and these are all plans that, when I speak to people, they're things that they want us to do.
When we speak to businesses, Brexit and getting Brexit right is one of the top of their agenda. Looking at the manifestos for yourselves and the Conservatives, it is difficult to see where you differ except on the things you're ruling out, like negotiating on EU nationals' rights. When it comes to freedom of movement and membership of the single market, you and Theresa May are singing from the same hymn sheet.
Well, I wish that were true. The problem Theresa May's got is she's being held hostage by the far right in her party, people who, as she said in her own Lancaster House speech on the 13th of January, want to see a race to the bottom. They want to see dropping corporate taxes right down to compete with the continent of Europe on the basis of a very low tax economy, where we become a tax dodger's paradise on the shores of Northern Europe, where it can only be paid for by lower wages, and that will happen because of the lack of investment that would follow, and by further cuts in public services. Now, that's not a vision I find at all attractive, and I'm sure it's not something that most people want to see. And it's not good for business either, because it's not looking to grow the economy, it's not looking for investment and attracting investment. And the alternative is that as we negotiate Brexit, we do so on the basis of getting the best possible access to the single market and making sure that we don't get divergence in regulation. And that's the biggest single challenge that businesses talk to me about. How do we make sure that regulations stay as they are, and that there is a sensible and workable way of maintaining the same sets of regulations between the continent of Europe and the UK?
But surely the best access and giving Britain a voice in those regulations is being a member of that single market.
Yes, it is. But now we're leaving, that's not going to be possible. So we've got to have the best possible access. And that's why these negotiations are so crucial. And that's what Labour will be fighting for in the negotiation. And look, there will be a vote at the end in the House of Commons. And whoever is in government, I think that it is really important that members of Parliament have a say on whether we think the final deal is in the interests of the people and the businesses of the United Kingdom. And when we have that vote in about 18 months' time, that's what we'll be voting on.
There are fears that given the Brexit referendum votes, that it would be a very brave MP who voted against that final deal, whatever it may be, when it goes to the Commons vote. Would there be any red lines within that deal that would make it, in your mind, too bad a deal to vote in?
Well, we don't know what the final deal will be, don't we? So it's an impossible question to answer. But look, the extremists in the Conservative Party who want us to leave with no kind of deal at all, who want this race to the bottom, who want low wages, and they want this to be the sweatshop of Europe, they would be very happy with those arrangements. And if that's what ends up happening, you know, I certainly think that a lot of MPs across the House of Commons will say, no, go back and have another go at the negotiations. And I think that, I mean, that's the important point. You know, if the deal's not right, we should carry on negotiating. We shouldn't just accept the kind of no deal sweatshop version of the UK that the extremists in the Conservative Party want. You know, we've got to get a sensible deal that works for the people and the businesses and the economy of the UK.
Finally, Bill, if we can move on to housing briefly. So in the manifesto, you're pledging 1 million new homes by the end of the parliament. That would be 200,000 a year, about 50,000 a year below where experts say we should be, but still an improvement on where we are at the moment. Yep. How would you get those built if it's something the private sector isn't managing at the moment?
Yeah, well, this is a crucial part of the economy, isn't it? Because getting construction going is one of the best and most effective ways of kickstarting the economy. These are high-skilled jobs where people are being paid well, which obviously helps other businesses with the way that money is spent nearby. And it's crucial that we're able to do this. You're also solving a chronic shortage of housing. And, you know, my area, just like many others around the country, have got a really big shortage. You know, you wait 15 years for a council house where I live. And we've got to do something to completely change the way that the housing market is dealt with. It's really important for the economy. It's really important for renters and for people who want to buy a home. And it's crucial we get it right. As to gearing up, I mean, the problem is we've had a record low level of house building for the last 7 years under both the Conservative Lib Dem coalition and then the last 2 years under the Conservatives. So we're going to have to, you know, this comes down partly to investing in skills, partly gearing up again in getting construction firms back into building houses. I mean, there are some very practical things that can be done with smaller house builders. I mean, I've spoken to a number of smaller house builders who are very, very keen to get going, but they find it very difficult because of the way that finance isn't made available to smaller companies, so access to finance is one of the answers to this. But yeah, there are a range of measures that are going to be needed, but certainly one of the roles of government is to intervene to help investment, to help support industry and businesses, and clearly construction and house building is a critical part of the success of our economy, and that's why it takes such an important part in our manifesto.
You say that you'll work with communities to get the houses they want built. What about communities where houses are needed, but they don't want the houses? How would you deal with NIMBYism?
Well, it's really important that those areas, you know, my own area has got this challenging balance of needs between wanting to protect the existing environment and community, and a shortage of houses. And I think the answer is to take people with you. It's to make sure that any houses that are built put local people at the top of the list, both for council housing, so you stay within a certain distance, the priorities for the people living in those areas, they get priority for council housing. And actually, you encourage the house builders to do the same for starter homes as well. You know, so they're offered to the local community first. So I think there are ways of doing what you quite rightly say is needed. And I think if you're going to change the nature of a community by significant amounts of house building, there's got to be a real benefit to the local community where the houses go. And you've got to get the roads right, you've got to get the schools right, the places for GPs, you've got to deal with issues like flooding, which is an issue where I live. You know, and if you do all of those things, you are then balancing the needs of the existing community with the need for housing. And you know, if you get that right, then most people can see the benefits outweigh the costs.
Finally, Bill, and thank you for your time this morning. I know that I'm getting a full range of topics here. We touched on immigration slightly, but particularly with Brexit negotiations, it is going to be a hot topic over the next few years. There are communities across the UK where immigration is seen as a major issue, and yet businesses are calling for freedom of movement to be retained and also more immigration, if anything. How are you approaching that conversation?
I mean, it's essential that foreign-born EU workers are allowed to stay. I mean, you know, on day one of a Labour government, that is one of the things we've committed to, because otherwise businesses are going to lose key workers. The health service is going to lose key staff. You know, the health service only succeeds because of the number of foreign workers. So we've got to, you know, where we have a shortage of skills, where those skills can only be filled by people coming in from overseas, you know, that's obviously got to continue. And that's whether the people are from the EU or not. But the long-term answer to this is, we've got to train people up. We've got to have that investment in skills that I've been talking about, so that far more UK people have the skills that are needed by employers in this country. I think the other element to this, which is really, really crucial, and the Conservatives just haven't done anything about this, we've got to stop undercutting. We've got to stop agencies bringing workers in from, say, from Eastern Europe, paying them in their local currency and in their home countries at a fraction of the minimum wage, which gives them which exploits the workers coming in, and it means that jobs aren't available for local people. I think those are some of the key ways forward. But in the end, if we have that investment, if we grow the economy, if we support business to create high-paid jobs, and we've got the workforce here to fill those high-paid jobs, then the need for the numbers of people coming in from overseas is not going to be as great. So if people have got concerns about immigration, it's that kind of investment, that long-term thinking, those practical measures that are the way to address the concerns of people about immigration and the immediate and longer-term needs of business and industry.
What do you make of that 10,000 or in the tens of thousands net migration targets of the Conservative government?
Well, they've failed, haven't they? I mean, they set these targets, completely failed with them, and refused to admit that that's not actually the way forward. And they're not being honest with people because, the answer is actually to have investment and to have a much more forward-looking approach, which looks after the needs of business and communities. And when we were in government, we had a migration fund, which was to help communities affected by significant numbers of people moving into areas. Those are the practical measures that have been seen to work over a number of years. Setting artificial targets that you've got no chance of meeting, it catches a headline one day, but all you're doing is setting people up for disappointment. And you're also creating misunderstanding, fear, and division, and building mistrust in politicians, and that's not a good idea. So we've got to be realistic. We've got to make promises we can keep, and we've got to have policies that are actually going to work.
That was the Shadow Business and Enterprise Minister Bill Esterson speaking to me for Jazz FM's Business Breakfast. You can hear the programme every weekday morning from 6 a.m. on Jazz FM.